Historically, whenever a highly lucrative resource is discovered, there's always an unavoidable, chaotic Wild West phase. You know, people are panning for gold, rules are basically being invented over breakfast, and fortunes are won and lost overnight.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, that era never lasts.
Right, it never does.
The raw extraction phase ends, and the infrastructure phase begins, and the rules of survival in that ecosystem fundamentally change. We move from asking, you know, what is this new thing, to who controls the supply chain?
Okay, let's unpack this. Welcome to our deep dive. The mission today is to extract the most critical insights from the Tech and AI Daily Dispatch for Tuesday, April 28th, 2026.
And just to set the stage, today is Monday, April 27th, 2026. So we are giving you a really cutting-edge preview of what's hitting the wire tomorrow.
Exactly. And the overarching theme, just screaming from the data today, is that the AI industry's Wild West phase, it's officially over. We are entering this heavily structured reality that is remapping global geopolitics, altering how software engineering is built, and, honestly, applying immense pressure to the privacy of everyday digital workers.
It's a massive shift.
It really is. We have a dense stack of updates today, and we're starting at the absolute highest macro level, which is the closing gap in the global AI arms race.
Right. So the newly released Stanford HAI 2026 AI Index is out. And the headline metric is, well, it's pretty sobering. The performance gap between the top models in the United States and the top models in China has essentially evaporated.
Wow. Evaporated entirely.
Basically, yeah. As of March 2026, Anthropic's leading model edges out China's best counterpart by only 2.7%.
I really want to contextualize that 2.7% for you listening. Mm. In the realm of large language models, a 2.7% variance on a benchmark, it isn't a functional advantage. It's statistical noise.
Yeah, it really is.
It means if you are building an automated logistics pipeline or a customer service agent, the end user experience is indistinguishable, regardless of which nation's model you are actually running. Hmm. And this isn't entirely sudden, right?
No, not at all. The Dispatch notes that DeepSeek's R1 architecture matched top-tier U.S. models way back in February 2025.
Right.
And now, DeepSeek has dropped a V4 preview claiming parity across the board with OpenAI, Anthropic, and Google.
But I want to challenge the prevailing narrative here a bit. Yeah. It feels like a marathon where one runner had this massive head start, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the other runner has suddenly pulled up right alongside them, like breathing down their neck.
Yeah.
So is the U.S. actually losing its edge, or are we simply witnessing the natural global diffusion of a new technology?
What's fascinating here is how the Stanford data segments the differing strategies of these two powers, because it's not a uniform foot race.
Okay, how so?
The U.S. is still unequivocally holding the line on top-tier frontier releases and high-impact foundational patents. They are laser-focused on building the most advanced core engines.
Mm, so they're winning the laboratory.
Exactly. But China, on the other hand, is completely dwarfing the U.S. in publication volume, academic citations, and, most importantly, industrial robot deployment. They are prioritizing the assembly line and physical integration. So the U.S. wins the lab, but China is dominating the factory floor.
It's less like two runners on a track and more like the mid-century space race. One side is obsessively engineering the single largest, most powerful rocket imaginable, while the other is rapidly manufacturing an armada of highly functional, deployment-ready satellites.
That's a great way to put it. And both nations clearly recognize that this tech is no longer just a lucrative software product. It is critical national infrastructure.
Which brings us to the Manus situation.
Right. The Manus fallout is the perfect illustration of this. For context, Manus was this incredibly viral AI agent startup based in China. Meta attempted a really aggressive acquisition.
And Beijing just stepped in and vetoed the deal.
Instantly. They explicitly cited national security concerns.
They drew an absolute red line, basically saying, you cannot buy our AI talent. And you cannot export our agentic intellectual property.
The veto is the clearest signal yet that AI talent and IP are now classified alongside, you know, advanced weapon systems or enriched uranium. Governments are locking down the flow of digital intelligence.
The geopolitical guardrails are literally being constructed in real time.
Yeah, and the convergence of global capabilities is happening way faster than the market originally forecasted.
And because talent and proprietary models are suddenly being so fiercely protected by nation states, the corporate giants who previously collaborated are realizing they need to secure their own independent supply chains. Here's where it gets really interesting. Microsoft and OpenAI are formally ending their exclusive revenue sharing deal.
This is a profound restructuring of the commercial landscape. I mean, that partnership virtually defined the generative AI boom.
It totally did.
For years, they operated almost symbiotically. OpenAI provided the algorithmic breakthroughs, and Microsoft provided the staggering amount of Azure compute required to actually train them. But now, they are shifting to an arm's-length relationship.
Think of it like a legendary rock band that had this massive debut album together, but now they're both confidently pursuing solo projects. Like, initially, OpenAI needed that exclusive contract just to survive the startup costs.
Exactly. The compute costs were astronomical.
But now OpenAI is so dominant that they want the freedom to use other cloud providers. And Microsoft has built up enough internal engineering capability that they're confident in their own AI stack.
From a purely operational standpoint, dropping the exclusivity gives OpenAI immense leverage. Their compute requirements are still skyrocketing, and being solely tethered to Azure was becoming a serious bottleneck.
And on the flip side, Microsoft letting that exclusivity go shows they don't feel they need to keep OpenAI on a leash to remain the enterprise leader.
Right. Speaking of Microsoft's infrastructure monetizing its position, we really have to look at GitHub Copilot. They are radically changing their billing structure.
Oh yeah, this is huge. GitHub is moving from a flat, predictable subscription model to a usage-based pay-per-use system. And I'll be honest, my immediate reaction to this is pretty negative.
I think a lot of developers are going to feel that way.
Doesn't a taximeter approach to coding penalize the developer? Like, if every time I hit the tab key to autocomplete a function, I am functionally ringing a tiny cash register, doesn't that psychological friction discourage me from experimenting and using the tool the way it was intended?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, GitHub's strategy reveals exactly how mature and deeply embedded AI tooling has become. The psychological shift you mentioned is totally real.
It's stressful.
It is. Transitioning from an all-you-can-eat buffet to a metered connection alters how you interact with your IDE. But GitHub is doing this because compute is incredibly expensive, and they know Copilot has crossed the threshold from a convenient feature to an absolute necessity.
They are betting that developers are physically incapable of going back to typing boilerplate code manually.
They're pricing it like a municipal utility. You don't pay a flat monthly rate for your home's electricity, right? You pay for the exact kilowatts you draw from the grid. GitHub views Copilot as the electrical current of modern software development.
Wow, that is a bold move.
It is. And for you listening, if you manage an engineering team or run a startup, you must model out this cost shift immediately. When you have 50 developers querying a language model hundreds of times a day, utility pricing will inflate your operational expenses drastically compared to a fixed license.
But you know, every time the corporate giants erect a new toll booth or jack up the utility rates, an entirely separate ecosystem is incentivized to build a free road right around them.
Oh, absolutely. The open source community.
Yes. While Microsoft and GitHub are locking things down, the open source community is deploying highly capable free alternatives at just a breakneck pace. It's an open source agentic rebellion.
The velocity of the open source space right now is staggering. They aren't just replicating closed source foundational models anymore. They are fundamentally innovating on agentic architecture.
The Dispatch highlights an open source community agent named Dirac. And Dirac just topped the Terminal Bench leaderboard.
Which is no small feat.
Not at all. For those who don't spend their days staring at AI benchmarks, Terminal Bench is a really rigorous environment where an AI is dropped into a simulated computer terminal and told to execute complex multi-step tasks, like debugging a broken server or configuring a database.
And Dirac beat highly funded closed source competitors, and it did so running on Gemini 3 Flash Preview, which is just a lightweight, efficient model.
But the tool that really caught my eye here is called Tendril. Tendril is an open source agent that is bootstrapping its own capabilities by building and registering new tools at runtime. So, what does this all mean? How does code invent its own tools?
To understand Tendril, we have to look at how previous agents failed. Historically, an AI agent had a hard-coded toolset. It could search the web, execute a Python script, or maybe query a specific SQL database.
Right, it had a set menu of options.
Exactly. So if you gave it a task that required interacting with a completely undocumented API, the agent would hit a wall and fail because it lacked the specific tool for that API. Tendril uses a self-extending architecture.
So when it hits that wall,
it writes a custom script to interface with the new API. It then spins up a secure, isolated sandbox.
It essentially builds a tiny, safe testing room for itself.
Yeah. It executes the script in the sandbox. If the script throws an error, Tendril reads the error, rewrites the code, and tries again. Once the code successfully executes the task, Tendril compiles that script, wraps it into a reusable format, and registers it in its own permanent memory bank.
That is insane. So the next time it encounters a similar problem, it doesn't need to write new code. It just pulls the new tool it invented out of its database.
Precisely.
It's like a Swiss Army knife that when it realizes it doesn't have the right blade for a task, it designs the blade, 3D prints it, slots it into its own handle, and just keeps working.
It's a recursive improvement loop. And the implications for frameworks like OpenClaw are profound. If you are integrating open source agents into your enterprise workflow, you're no longer limited by the APIs your engineering team has time to manually connect.
The fact that a community-driven project can pull this off proves you don't need a trillion-dollar data center to win in the agentic space. Clever architecture is outmaneuvering brute force compute.
It really is. But there's a catch to all of this.
There's always a catch.
Whether we are talking about a brilliant self-extending agent like Tendril or an enterprise model running Copilot, they all share one fundamental dependency. They require oceans of data to train their reasoning engines.
And the dispatch reveals that the pipeline feeding this data is currently rupturing, exposing severe vulnerabilities in human privacy.
The scale of data extraction required to maintain parity in this arms race has basically outpaced the security infrastructure protecting it.
Yeah, look at Merkur. It's a platform utilized to source and pay the global workforce of human contractors who actually train these AI models, and they just suffered a catastrophic breach. Hackers stole 4 terabytes of voice samples belonging to 40,000 AI contractors.
A breach of this nature is fundamentally different from a stolen password database.
Right, you can just reset a password.
Exactly. You cannot reset your vocal biometrics. 4 terabytes of high-fidelity, isolated audio is more than enough data to clone the voices of all 40,000 individuals with near-perfect accuracy.
This makes me so angry. We spend countless hours debating theoretical AI safety. You know, worrying about whether an agent might write malicious code or offer biased advice. Meanwhile, the actual humans grinding away in the data mines, reading scripts to train these voice models, are having their permanent biometric identities compromised.
It's a glaring blind spot in the industry.
These 40,000 people were just doing their jobs, and now their exact voice prints are floating around the dark web. Are we just completely ignoring the safety of the workers building this future?
This raises an important question regarding the legal and ethical tension at the foundation of our digital infrastructure. We tend to treat data pipelines as sterile technical abstracts, but in reality, they are constructed from the granular personal telemetry of everyday citizens.
And this exact tension is currently playing out at the highest levels of the U.S. judicial system. The Supreme Court is reviewing a landmark case regarding whether law enforcement requires a warrant to access geofence cell location data.
Let's break down the mechanism of a geofence warrant, because it sounds like a spy movie, but it's actually just a database query.
Right. Normally, if police suspect someone of a crime, they get a warrant for that specific person's phone records. A geofence warrant works in reverse.
Exactly. Law enforcement draws a digital perimeter around a location, say a bank that was robbed, and asks a company like Google to hand over the anonymized device IDs of every single smartphone that was inside that perimeter during a specific 2-hour window.
Then they look for suspicious movement patterns, narrow down the device IDs, and ask Google to unmask the identity of the suspects.
The technological friction here is that the same underlying location pipelines that serve you highly targeted local restaurant advertisements are the exact pipelines law enforcement is attempting to query.
The Supreme Court's ruling is going to establish a profound precedent because the digital ecosystem requires continuous, aggressive data harvesting just to function, whether that data is feeding ad algorithms, routing traffic, or training AI models.
And the legal system is now struggling to determine where the corporate right to harvest that data ends and the citizen's expectation of privacy begins.
It's a total collision course between the insatiable data appetite of modern tech and the fundamental rights of the user. And, you know, that theme of fundamental digital plumbing shifting and breaking under pressure, it isn't just happening in the Supreme Court or in corporate data centers.
No, it's happening right now on your local machine.
Exactly. We need to cover some crucial infrastructure and tooling updates from the dispatch. These are the nuts and bolts that developers rely on every single day. Let's call this our rapid-fire survival guide.
And in software engineering, ignoring the quiet deprecation of a boring tool is precisely how catastrophic production outages occur.
Case in point, PG Backrest. This is one of the most widely deployed PostgreSQL database backup tools in the world, and the dispatch notes it has been entirely abandoned by its primary maintainer. Development has just stopped.
The real danger of an abandoned backup tool is that it fails silently.
What do you mean?
Well, if a user interface library breaks, the website crashes and you fix it immediately. But if PG Backrest is abandoned today, your database doesn't crash. Everything looks fine. But 8 months from now, an underlying operating system update might alter a crucial dependency and the backup tool will just stop archiving data.
Oh, wow. So you won't realize it's broken until your primary database corrupts.
And you attempt a disaster recovery only to discover your archives are completely empty.
That is a nightmare scenario. If your production environment relies on PG Backrest, you must evaluate a migration path to an alternative like PG Barman immediately. Audit your backup stack today so you aren't explaining to your CEO why a dead open source repository deleted the company's user data.
Absolutely.
Moving from database servers to your actual laptop, Apple is introducing a significant architectural shift in macOS 27. They are rerouting network traffic through a new unified network layer.
Apple's goal here is likely streamlining handoffs between Wi-Fi and cellular networks to improve battery life for the average consumer. But for a developer, altering the core networking layer is highly disruptive.
Right, because if you rely on Docker for containerized development or use Tailscale for zero trust networking, this update alters the basic assumptions your software relies on. Let's drill into the HOW of that disruption. Docker doesn't just run code, right?
Right. It creates a complex web of virtual Ethernet bridges so that isolated containers can talk to each other and to the host machine's ports. And those virtual bridges require deep hardware-level routing permissions.
So if macOS 27 forces all network traffic through a centralized user space networking daemon,
those direct hardware bridges could fail entirely. Your local containers might suddenly lose the ability to resolve local host names or communicate with your database container.
Developers need to aggressively test their local environments against the macOS 27 beta before allowing their entire engineering department to just blindly update their operating systems. You really do not want half your office spending 3 days debugging network routing tables instead of writing product features.
No, you do not.
Okay, let's finish up with a tool that is actually designed to make life easier rather than more complicated. A new open source project called QuarkDown has just launched. It is an extension of standard Markdown that adds macros, a scripting layer, and advanced layout primitives.
This solves a highly specific but incredibly painful friction point in technical writing.
I am so ready for this.
Right. Markdown is universally loved because it is simple and fast for writing plain text. But the moment you need to typeset a formal document, say, precisely aligning images, wrapping text around diagrams, or generating complex PDF layouts, Markdown just fails.
Historically, you had to abandon Markdown and wrestle with LaTeX, which has an agonizingly steep learning curve, or just fight with a conversion tool like Pandoc.
QuarkDown essentially bridges that gap. It gives you the lightweight typing speed of Markdown, but injects just enough programmatic control to let you format a professional document without needing a PhD in typesetting.
If you write technical documentation, white papers, or research summaries, definitely evaluate QuarkDown. It could save you hours of formatting frustration.
Highly recommend checking it out.
Okay, let's quickly trace the arc of the insights we just extracted today. We began at the highest geopolitical altitude, breaking down the Stanford report that shows the U.S. and China are essentially at parity, separated by a razor-thin 2.7% margin in top-tier AI performance.
We examine how that intense global competition is forcing Microsoft to confidently uncouple from OpenAI, while GitHub transitions Copilot to expensive utility-based pricing to offset their massive compute costs.
Then we explored the rapid, brilliant evolution of the open source community, looking at how agents like Tendril are recursively coding and testing their own tools in secure sandboxes.
We also confronted the severe privacy vulnerabilities feeding these models, highlighted by the horrific theft of 40,000 vocal prints from Merkur and the Supreme Court's impending decision on geofence data extraction.
And finally, we audited our local dev environments, waving goodbye to PG Backrest, bracing for the macOS 27 network overhaul, and welcoming QuarkDown. That is a dizzying amount of structural change for a single daily dispatch.
It really is. But I want to leave you with a final thought to synthesize a few of these seemingly disparate threads we've discussed. We just talked about how open source autonomous agents like Tendril can now dynamically build their own capabilities at runtime without human intervention.
Right.
We also saw that the once insurmountable geopolitical gap in foundational model performance has essentially vanished. So what happens when agile, self-extending, open source code begins competing directly against rigid, nation-state-level digital infrastructure? In a digital ecosystem where the ground is continuously shifting beneath your feet, who is actually steering the ship?
Wow. Are the corporate giants steering it? Is the open source community steering it? Or is the technology itself beginning to dictate the direction of the current?
That is a profound question to leave on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the infrastructure beneath your workflows. Keep pushing the boundaries of what you're building. And seriously, go check your Postgres backup logs right now. We'll catch you next time.